to be American.
This is Democracy Optimist. Here's your host, Professor Joshua Douglas of the University of Kentucky Rosenberg College of Law.
Democracy is about representation. Elected officials should fairly represent the interests of their constituents. But what causes someone to run in the first place? What is it like when they first take office? And how does it feel when you enter the halls of government, especially in the minority party? Here to give us an inside view of how democracy and representation actually works is Anne Donworth, who represents the 76th District in the Kentucky House of Representatives. That's the district that covers much of Lexington, so I am one of Anne's constituents, and now I get to put her in the hot seat. Representative Donworth, welcome to Democracy Optimist.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So we first met when you were not a representative, but were the director of development for the Lexington Public Library. Seems like a pretty good job. So why'd you decide to run for office?
That's the weird thing about fundraising. You get involved with a lot of weird things that you never thought you would. One of the things for me was that the library had a few pieces of legislation that were going to cut public funding for our public library system. So we couldn't use public dollars to fight it in the state legislature. So I, through the Library Foundation, ended up being the registered employer of a lobbyist and started going to Frankfurt. And I think that's really what happens when you start paying attention to what's going on in Frankfurt and you see other things that are going on that you wish you could engage on those topics. You start paying more attention and eventually that's what kind of what drove me to run.
Yeah. So you actually were kind of, this is almost a call to duty in that you saw what was happening and thought you had a voice that you might be able to lend.
Exactly. So it's been a learning experience, but that's life.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting to hear that a lot of people think about politics should be this kind of idealistic notion. But what you're saying is that in many ways you did embody that, that you heard things and you said, you know, why isn't my voice here as well?
Exactly. And then when the seat that I now occupy was held by a woman named Ruth M. Palumbo, who was there for a very long time. And when she announced her retirement, it was, I mean, for me, it was really important that we have a woman. Mm-hmm. It was really important that we have a parent. And I know we'll get into that a little bit later on. I wanted somebody who would be able to fight for us as well.
Sure. So let's talk about the campaign. You decided to run. You're going door to door in spring of 2024. What were you hearing from voters? What were they talking about?
So that was a lot of what people were talking about were abortion and women's health care, mm-hmm. women's reproductive care specifically, housing, both affordability and affordable housing. So you have affordable housing, which is targeted for low-income restricted, to have that capital A, affordable housing, but also affordability for general housing and how can people be able to find good quality houses. Also heard, you know, gun safety is one of those things that comes up in spurts mm-hmm. when something terrible happens and then people are very upset about it. There were a few incidences last spring. So I did hear quite a bit about that. That was one of the things that was really important for me as well. Mm-hmm. But that was certainly for the Democratic voters in our district. That was something that was really important.
And so a lot of bread and butter issues, you know, not pie in the sky, democracy, you know, the 2024 presidential election, a lot of that was, at least on the Democratic side, you know, was about democracy. But you weren't hearing that from people. You were hearing about kind of these bread and butter concerns.
No. And also in 2024, we were also hearing so much about education because of Amendment 2 being on the ballot. Democracy is kind of this abstract, beautiful thing, but that is not what is on when you go into the voting booth. You're thinking about the price of eggs. Mm-hmm. You're thinking about, can I get the prescription that my doctor just wrote it? Can I afford it? So those are not the kitchen table issues that people have in mind when they're going in to vote.
Sure. So you won the primary, close election, and ran unopposed in the general election. So basically winning the primary in May 2024 won you the seat, although obviously you needed at least a few people to vote in November to make sure you won the general. When did the planning to start, to take office start? Right after May when you won? You mean, what sort of things were you doing throughout 2024 to get ready to take office?
So I had a little bit of extra time. Most people, when they come in, they don't know that they're going to win until after November. So I used that time. I went to a lot of the interim committee meetings in Frankfurt to learn about the issues that the legislature was looking into and doing more research into it, just so that I could get a feel for the process, but also for the issues that were going to be coming up. I met with most, not quite all, but most of the committee chairs, because I wanted to be able to build relationships as much as I could, but also learn about the types of issues that would come before each individual committee. My standard questions for all of them were, what are you the most proud of in the last couple of years, and what do you think is coming in the next 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
But to try to build relationships, because so much of it is relationship-based. Locally, I didn't change a whole lot about what I was doing in the community. I was still going to all the community events that I always loved and supported. I wasn't, obviously, wasn't fundraising or knocking doors or doing the advertisements the same way that I had been, but still trying to be present and understanding what's going on and trying to meet also with local and federal officials so that we could be able to work together for the people of Lexington.
So you go to Frankfurt in January of this year to actually officially take your oath and take the seat. Tell us about that first day in Frankfurt, or maybe leading up to that. But I know there's a new member orientation. You know, did someone show you around to, like, say, like, here's how you get through the tunnels that go between the annex of the Capitol and the actual floor of the House?
So thankfully, we had 2 days of orientation in December, because the day that was scheduled in January was the day before the inauguration day. And that was a major snow day.
Mm-hmm.
So the Capitol was closed and we didn't have that third day of orientation.
Mm-hmm.
But we had our badges made so that we could access the tunnels, parking permits. We actually didn't get until the first day of session.
Did you have to park up with the masses for the first day?
No, we parked on the legislator floor, but then we got little notes from security saying, you're not supposed to park here. We had to say, no, I was. But we didn't have time with our legislative aides. One of the things that people don't realize, there isn't a staff for each member of the General Assembly. You have one aide that will serve three or four different legislators. I'm lucky my aide only works with one other person,
mm-hmm.
but I really hadn't met her going into it. Didn't know which office I was going to be in until the day I got there. And it's just kind of a surreal feeling.
And did someone at least show you around a little bit and, you know, tell you how to swipe in and how to, you know, which tunnels took you where? Or were you just wandering around kind of figuring it out?
I knew from my time in Frankfurt, I don't think there was anything. I think it just was we each within our caucus were assigned a mentor. And my mentor probably would have offered that, but I didn't need it.
Mm-hmm. So to walk us through that very first day on the floor itself, what was that like when you're now on the floor of the Kentucky House of Representatives as a member of the General Assembly?
You just look up and think, wow, I can't believe I'm here. I can't believe I'm actually doing this.
Your kids were with you that day?
My kids and my mom were there with me and one of my really good friends. And, you know, we have the formal swearing-in ceremony, and obviously listeners can't hear this, but I was shaking from head to toe.
And what did you think right after? Like, right after you got sworn in, what was going through your head, if you can even remember?
Probably things I shouldn't say, or I can't say on the air. A lot of excitement, a lot of disbelief and honor. You know, to be able to sit in those halls. I mean, our state capitol is a really beautiful, amazing place, and you feel that when you walk on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So just feeling that legacy of what's happened there and knowing that I get to be a part of helping shape what comes for future generations. Go ahead.
What are you going to add to that?
Well, I was going to add, after the swearing in, where we all swear in together, then it's straight down to business. We started right into the rules conversation. So there's not really much easing the way in.
Interesting. So what's something about being a state legislator that most people don't know, or maybe some fun perks, some hidden frustrations?
Fun perks, which are also a frustration. You are given the opportunity to buy a lot of things.
Such as what?
Such as basketball tickets at UK and U of L, a box at the Derby and the Oaks. And so, but you're still paying for them.
Mm-hmm.
You just have the access. And if you bought all of these things, I'm pretty sure that would take up your entire salary for the year. And I think people expect your state level leaders to have a campaign slush fund. We don't. It's most of what we are doing are coming out of our own pockets.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just different than what I had expected. And so you kind of pick and choose what you want to do and what you can do. And you try to do as many things as you possibly can and be as present as you can be.
Mm-hmm. So you're a Democrat. And there are 100 seats in the Kentucky House, and 20 are held by Democrats, 80 by Republicans. So what's it like to be not only in the minority party, but in the super minority party?
That is actually what I tell people is the biggest surprise about Frankfort, coming from Lexington,
mm-hmm.
where we are nonpartisan. I think people don't understand how partisan politics work. With an 80-20 supermajority, the majority party literally doesn't have to listen to the minority. They've got the votes for whatever they want to pass. So we don't have much opportunity to negotiate behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
I typically say if something goes to committee or comes up onto the floor of the House or the floor of the Senate, it's already going to pass. They already know they have the votes. That's usually when we get the materials as a super minority, and it's too late at that point. So all we can do is talk to the people. And that's actually what I did fairly regularly on the floor. Nobody in the chamber is going to listen to my opposition on House Bill 4, which is the one that removed diversity, equity, inclusion from our higher education systems. At that point, you just have to talk to the public and tell people that you support them. And there's not anything else you can do in that situation.
Did being in that position make you lose a little bit of faith in terms of the project of democracy? You're speaking to the people, but, you know, maybe your constituents voted for you, but so many people in Kentucky voted for the other party. Do you have that sense of like, well, why even bother?
I actually have the opposite. I have the fight rather than the flight.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, we all have different political ideologies. Not all Democrats believe the exact same thing either. We're all somewhere on a spectrum. So for good public policy, in my opinion, it has to be something that both sides can live with. And that negotiation and finding the middle ground, that's where good public policy comes. And when you have a supermajority where there isn't that need to work together, you don't have that. And mm-hmm. so for me, I am all about how do we pick up more seats on the Democratic side, even independents. We don't have any independents in the state legislature right now. But I think that is the only way that we are going to have a more lowercase d Democratic Commonwealth right now.
We're speaking with Ann Donworth, who is a member of the Kentucky House of Representatives, representing a district in Lexington, Kentucky. Let's talk about some of those behind-the-scenes conversations. You know, you said that not being in the majority, but being actually in the super minority makes it hard for those, for the Republicans currently to even need to reach out to Democrats to get the votes. But are there any examples where you were surprised by some bipartisanship activity happening in Frankfort?
Yes, and that's where it comes down to relationships on many levels. One of my colleagues here in Lexington, Representative Chad Aull, was able to work with a Republican who took Chad's bill. They worked together. It was Representative Kevin Jackson, who's a Republican legislator, and they co-sponsored a bill that did pass.
Mm-hmm.
Adriel Camuel had one of her bills that one of the Republicans actually took the bill without talking to her and added it into another one. So her legislation did pass as part of a package. Without credit for her. So there are examples of that. Representative Adam Moore actually got a bill. He's a freshman with me as well, out of Lexington and Jessamine County. He had a bill that passed the House but not the Senate to cap the price of EpiPens.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a few bright spots, but when you're passing hundreds of pieces of legislation and just a handful of them are from Democratic legislators, it can be frustrating. There's not a whole lot of bipartisanship.
Hmm. So you alluded to this also, but one of the most frustrating things for me as a scholar of democracy and election rules is the legislative process known as the committee substitute or committee sub. And I'm not aware of other states that do it to this extreme like Kentucky does, where you have a bill introduced, there's a committee hearing set, and moments before the committee convenes, a substitute bill is disseminated, known as the committee sub. And it could be completely different from what the initial published bill was. I remember once I went to go testify about a bill on voting, and the committee sub actually was given a copy of it early, but other people who were there to testify, some organizations, were asked to speak about a bill they had not yet read. How is this a thing? And you know, if democracy is about accountability and transparency, how do we get rid of this?
Yeah, I think in theory, what's supposed to happen with a committee substitute is it's supposed to be a small amendment. Instead, just a small change to make something better. You change a word. What happens too often is that it becomes a last-minute substitution where no one from the public has vetted it. Oftentimes, no one from the minority has vetted it either. We had one that came as a floor amendment, actually, in the waning hours. We had several that came as floor amendments in waning hours of the session this year. One went from, I think it was 7 pages, and then had a committee sub that took it to 40 pages. And then when it came up on the House floor, had another one that took it to 140 pages. And the media was complaining about no one's seen this bill. And I'm sitting here as a legislator like, I didn't see it until it popped up on the screen in front of me.
And you question whether the people who voted for it had actually read it or not.
I mean,
as well.
Right.
140 pages that just came out. Surely some of them had, but, you know.
I'm sure some of them had, but I doubt all.
Yeah.
So it's frustrating on all sides. And what we often heard from the majority or from, well, actually only from the majority, but the majority people who had been there for a long time saying it was so much worse when the Democrats were in power. You have no idea. It was so much worse. And I realize I'm a freshman legislator and I'm naive and blissfully so, but just because one side did it wrong doesn't make it right. And so for me, my response to that is, well, and look what that did them. So you should learn your lesson from what happened to the Democrats who were in power 20 years ago. Practice good governance. And you are here to represent the people. We are here to represent the people. So we've got to make sure that we can actually hear their voices.
Let's talk about voting policy specifically. You won your seat in a close primary last May, but it was extremely low turnout, right? I think it was in the teens in terms of the turnout. So do we really have a representative democracy when so few people show up? When, you know, it was, I think, less than 15% turnout and you won a very close race, and then that ultimately gave, you know, you winning the seat. Is that how representative democracy should be?
It's not. And statewide, I think it was about a 12% average. Ours was the highest in the state, and I think it was 18%.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is just really sad.
So how do we fix it?
I would love to say that open primaries are a way to do it, but I don't know, because even that's across both parties and all parties. that we have such low turnout. I don't know what the answer is, but it's not right what we're doing right now.
And perhaps at least having conversations like these can help people understand the importance of having representatives who actually represent their views, right? Are you optimistic about democracy? You know, this is a show called Democracy Optimist, but you're in the super minority party, and I can hear some of the frustrations about what you weren't able to accomplish, perhaps, or some of the hurdles that you faced as a freshman Democratic legislator. So are you optimistic?
I weirdly am. I mean, that's the weird thing. Like, yes, I'm frustrated, but I think what we're seeing around the country right now is people realizing that they need to pay attention. And I hope that that translates into participation at the polls. But I think people are having to wake up as things are changing. I also see it with my daughter and your daughter and middle school and high school kids throughout Lexington. They're getting involved, mm-hmm. and they're using their voices and getting their friends involved, and they're paying attention. The kids are paying attention. Then we're going to be okay.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting that, you know, you hear conversations with you mentioned my daughter, who is very in tune with what's going on, you know, locally in the state and nationally, and perhaps it is our youth will save us. Keeping this out of partisan politics, what's one thing that listeners can do to support democracy?
I think finding your cause, whether that is through your church, whether that is on behalf of the library or the school that your kids go to. It could be really anything, but getting involved in an organization that you care about and building up that community, whatever it looks like to you. I think ultimately we have all gotten into our silos, and doing something to help other people and being a part of our larger community is what America is all about.
Ann Donworth is a member of the Kentucky House of Representatives, whose district includes Lexington. Ann, thank you so much for joining Democracy Optimist.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
As a practical matter, can we claim to have a representative democracy when so few people are showing up to vote?
I think we can't accept that kind of turnout and, you know, report as, you know, 18% was good because it was, you know, better than the statewide average. You know, that's in the primary that is very low turnout. It's a closed primary, so you have to be a registered member of the party. And in fact, independents are the largest growing number of voters in Kentucky, and they can't vote in either the Democratic or Republican primary. So I do think we need to look at the closed primary law here. But no, I think we cannot accept. And let me just bring it to the presidential election. You know, there are news stories after November 2024 touting the strong voter engagement. Two-thirds of the electorate, a little less, 64% turnout. Over a third of the people didn't show up. We can't celebrate that as strong, even if it was historically high, because so many people sat it out.
Thanks for joining us for this series of conversations about how elections work, about the value of your vote, and about challenges to your right and freedom to make choices at your local polling place. Find our series online at democracyoptimist.com. Joshua Douglas, writer and host, Mike Savage, executive producer. I'm Tom Martin, your series producer. Neil Kesterson, technical director and sound designer. Democracy Optimist theme song, American, by Madeline Peru. Mason Graber and Stephen Dabney, research assistants. Caitlin Douglas, graphic designer. Ella Fitzgeraldine, studio dog. Democracy Optimist is a special Eastern Standard series produced by Dynamics Productions for Richmond, Kentucky-based public radio station WEKU.